This is Hidden Tillers Live with Tony Bruschi and Robin Dree.
Corey Richens on trial for the murder of her husband, Eric Richens. She allegedly fed him a Moscow mule laced with what she referred to as the Michael Jackson stuff. It wasn't propofol. It was fentanyl. She didn't really know what she was getting. And apparently neither did the housekeeper or the guy that she bought it from. But he's dead. And she's on trial. She's been charged with it. And before all of this happened, Eric was telling his friends, I think my wife tried to poison me on Valentine's Day. A few weeks after that, he was dead. As always, Robin Drake, retired FBI Special Agent, Chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, with us as we break down your questions on the case. You can leave them in the comment section on Substack and YouTube, and we'll try and get to them. Here's one of them, and it is certainly regarding exactly that. I think my wife tried to poison me after Valentine's Day. She left a sandwich in his truck, actually an omelet and a sandwich. We didn't know about the omelet, but there was an omelet in a sandwich that she picked up from one of his favorite restaurants. He got pretty sick, and he was concerned. Robin, what's going on in someone's head when they suspect that their lover is someone very close to them is trying to kill them, and they don't leave? How do they process that while continuing to go forward and put on a straight face?
It's a very interesting thing. I think there's a lot of layers to this. The first thing I'm going to, when I read this question, the first thing that popped in my mind was a little while ago, as you all know, I read a lot and I love biographies. One of the interesting biographies I read was a book called Rebel Yell. It's the story of Stonewall Jackson. And Stonewall Jackson was an interesting individual. And again, this wasn't coined by him, but it kind of brought it to the forefront when I read the book. That's why I'm referring it to him. We are surprised, and here's what he wrote about, like, not too long before he died. We are always surprised as a human being that we're actually mortal. The greatest surprise any of us have is that we die. Like, in the last moments before we die, we desperately grab onto life because we can't believe it's ending. We just can't fathom the fact that we're going to die. It's easier to think in terms of, I'm angry enough that I could do harm to someone, than the fact that is that we're going to actually die from the hands of someone else. It's such an unfathomable thing to us as an organism that we just don't think that way. So that's the first thing. Now we can kind of layer that disbelief of our mortality in general, not for every individual, but in general, on top of the fact of, so why would someone share that information? I'll relate this to suicide victims, believe it or not. When I was in the Marine Corps, I was one of the last things I did in the Marine Corps was I was a series and company commander at Parris Island, South Carolina. I helped write a thing called The Crucible when I was doing that in those years. And I had kids that wanted so desperately to get out of the Marine Corps that they'd feign suicide. Mm-hmm. Because if you have a suicide gesture, the military and the Marine Corps is not going to keep you. And so these kids would
Let's use a different word than suicide.
Okay, what do you want to use?
Whatever, unalive.
Self-harm. Self-harm.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you have an inclination of self-harm, it's what people will do to get out of things in the Marine Corps. And so they were feigning self-harm by Bic razors and silly things because it was feigning. And they were broadcasting. Now, my point of this is if someone is broadcasting that they're going to do self-harm, in most situations, again, not licensed therapists, but in my experience in talking to licensed therapists, it is generally a cry for help. It's testing the waters. Can someone help me? I need help. Here's why I need help, because I don't feel great about myself. And same thing here. I think with Eric Richens, he's broadcasting, I think my wife is trying to kill me. He's testing the waters. Am I sane? What do you see? So this is like testing, looking for an objective, you know, loving critic to say, am I insane or is this real? Yeah. So I think that's part of it, because people that actually are serious about self-harm, they don't broadcast. They just do.
Well, and what do you make of this? Because this was an interesting aspect of the case that has come out in the last week or so, too. And I didn't even catch it the other day in testimony. I had to go back and look this up. So Eric's telling friends that he thinks Corey, you know, tried to do this. He even jokes about it at one point with friends and all together, and they all have a good laugh about it. And he's like, yeah, she tried to do this. Because it's such an absurd thing. And friends are like, of course, she would never do that. She in a text message tells another one of her friends after he's saying this to his friends and family, and it's already kind of a joke, that if something happens to her, it's him. A little projection going on there. What's your take? I mean, is that just all that is? It's just typically how kind of a narcissist works, where they're going to project really almost the opposite of what's going on. So you're going to think this about him, of him being the victim. No, he couldn't possibly be the victim. I have to be the victim here. And I'm going to say this about him before she actually does it, allegedly. That was a weird process to me, that she's out there matching him toe-to-toe as he's telling friends and family, she could do this to me, or I think she did this to me, or attempted it once. Now she's over here saying, if something happens to me, he did it. But there's no evidence that he's ever tried to do anything to her.
Right. I think you're spot on with that, is the narcissistic, you know, look at me moment too. If he's going to claim this and get attention, well, he can't have more attention than me, then I'm going to say this. Another aspect that plays into this when working with anyone and individuals, here's almost not full, nothing in human behavior is foolproof, but here's a pretty predictable behavior also. I do this with my wife all the time and my kids, and that is, if you have a response, an emotional response to someone, say that you're annoyed by someone, say that someone is frustrating you, or you think they're X, Y, and Z, the likelihood of them having that exact feeling towards you is almost 100%. Mm-hmm. So if we're in so just to put our thought caps on here, you know, for anyone that's ever been in a relationship that went sideways and you're no longer in a relationship with this person, and you at any time said, I think this person is really self-centered ass, what do you think the likelihood of them saying the same thing about you is? Pretty high. Because everything is context. And if you're butting heads like this, it means you're butting heads because you both have the same pig-headed opinion about each other. And not saying this pig-headed is right or wrong. It just, you just have the same opinion about the other person being this bad person. Because if the other person said, oh, you're completely right, I'm wrong, then it works.
Yeah,
but
true.
So this is good. So I think it's a little bit of both with her. It's the look at me moment because he can't grab the spotlight at the same time as maybe she did think it, although doubtful.
Here's another question. It says, the text that gets me is relieved. She texted Josh Grossman, this is her boyfriend, that she felt relieved after Eric died. Not sad, not scared, relieved. It says, both of you, is there any world in which she is innocent? Because I can't get there. Relieved. That's... Yeah, what do you think?
So just the word relieved isn't going to make you guilty of murder.
No.
But this case is a case built upon a lot of data points, right? A lot of very, very strange data points. And so let's look at that word relieved and in the context of what's going on in her life. And really, it re-emphasizes and doubles down on what Siobhan was saying the other day and our other great guests of her narcissistic behavior. Here's a mother of children who just lost her husband. And the first, I know if my wife ever lost me, and I know if your daughter ever lost you, the people who love us in our lives, the first thought that we would have is the impact of the loss on our kids. But her first reaction was the impact it was on her.
Yeah.
She totally ignored the impact on her kids. And then she, and I know this comes up in a later question, then she decides to make it right by, I'll write a book for my kids, which is actually serving me. So that initial behavior, again, how people respond under stress when faced with immediate information, their first initial response generally gives a greater indication of what their character is and who they are at their core than after they have time to process and then put the face on. So if her initial reaction was relief and not fear for what her kids would do without their dad, it really shows where that mind's at. Doesn't make her guilty, just makes her really self-centered, which the entire case is really built upon.
Which is 1,000% true. I mean, I can guarantee there are people out there right now who are listening to this or watching this who are not in a happy relationship with their spouse or significant other, and they would never kill them. But if they found out later that their spouse were run over by a stampede of zebras from the zoo because they got out freakishly and ran over their spouse and they were killed, they might be relieved. And that doesn't mean that they would murder them or what, but because that obstacle or that hindrance to their happiness in their mind, whatever, however they want to frame it, is gone. But you make such a good point there that yes, selfishly they may feel that way, but they, if they have kids or something, they'd be thinking something completely different. If they were not a narcissistic borderline monster, that, you know, in my opinion.
I'll flip it. So, you know, there would be relief. So say that she's in an unhealthy relationship and her husband is, there's battering going on and he is a crazy loon. And if he's treating the kids that way as well, and he's known to be a bad dad and the family's bad relationships, unhealthy relationships, then, you know, saying that I was relieved, that would play well. But from what we're seeing, both from testimony from the dad, relatives, about what a good dad he was and how involved he was with the kids' lives and what an impact on the kids his loss is, you know, that's not a response that is congruent with what you would typically expect, even if someone's going through divorce. I mean, I don't know anyone that that loses a spouse and doesn't think of the impact on their kids, as long as that spousal relationship with the kids was a good one.
Yeah. Oh, I can think of a few. I can go over to the Adelson family, and there's some very interesting, but the over there, the mom has not been charged with anything. You know, she maintains her innocence, but you know, the ripping of away from the grandparents. I mean, there was a lot there that was like, oh, we're clearly not thinking of the children's best interest here. But I mean, it happens because so many people just, they don't, for whatever reason, that switch just doesn't flip when they have a child.
And we never heard her say, I mean, we never heard that word out of her mouth. And
no.
The relief that he's gone. I mean, it was anything but good, healthy behavior, but you still didn't even hear that word.
No, you did not. You
isn't that interesting?
You certainly did not.
Good comparison.
I mean, I saw somebody put up a video over the weekend comparing the Corey Richens shot of her getting the news and her reaction on the couch to, and again, I'm not accusing Wendy Adelson of anything, of Wendy Adelson's reaction when she found out in the police station that her ex had died. It was very similar physical. I mean, again, it doesn't mean anything, or it might. I don't know. It's interesting.
They had very similar effects on Wen, didn't they, both of them?
They did. And very similar modalities with them, and it's interesting. I mean, because there was the ex-boyfriend of Wendy that took the stand for all that time in that trial.
He was caught up in her, man.
Caught up in her the same way this guy was caught up in the, except Wendy's boyfriend had a bit more, a better motor, I would say. He was a little more functional, I think, in life. And this guy was more like, I'll show up, pay me whatever you want, as long as I can be near you. You know, I mean, it was like a sad puppy that
was.
Like, please just feed me tonight and don't let me get eaten by the coyotes.
That was the saddest thing ever. It's like watching him and describing that he gave up, you know, this is Corey's boyfriend talking about how he traveled across the country, relocated to Utah to basically not have a job and just be at Corey's beck and call.
Yeah.
And that she'll just give him gifts and cash now and then. I'm like, what?
And those lovely text messages to keep him going throughout the day.
And she's married. It's like, what?
Yeah, and she's married. Like, and the guy's like, I fall harder skills than most. Yeah, you do. I'm sorry. Like, I feel bad for the guy because he seems like a genuine, like, take the shirt off his back, but he's not very discriminatory. He doesn't have good boundaries on who he chooses to take the shirt off his back for. For that guy, it seemed like, pretty lady, whatever you want. And
he's got skills. That was,
yeah,
you know, geez, poor guy. who didn't feel for him.
let's hit one more question here on the case of Corey Richens. And let's talk about this one. Robin, I need you to explain something to me. Corey allegedly asked for the Michael Jackson drug after the first attempt. It didn't work. She escalated. What does it take psychologically for someone to fail at something like that and then immediately try and go bigger? Because that's not panic. That's something else. What's your thoughts there?
You know, when I first saw this question, I was like, of course. Hasn't she done that with everything financially her entire life?
I mean, we end at payday loan store to pay off all these other loans. So yes, she just keeps making horrible choices. She ups the ante every time.
She's horrible at decision-making and problem-solving. And yet she thinks she's great, and so she just doubles down on the same thing. So if first you don't kill your husband, try again. Not that she did, innocent until proven guilty, but just look at her track record of what she did financially. She dug herself into the biggest hole possible. That your $2.1 million life insurance policies on your dead husband that you secretly took out won't even cover your debt.
it wouldn't. She'd still have been in debt.
That to me, you know, I only got to that level actually a couple, probably last week or two with you covering the thing. Is I was originally like, oh wow, she did this to be to kind of get the slate clean and be scot free. No, she wasn't even, you know. So thank God for this boyfriend that he got out of it when he did, though, this all happened, because next thing you know, he's going to have these secret life insurance policies on him.
Well, here's something else from court that happened last week that I don't think we've touched on very much. I think we talked with Coffendaffer about it the other day a bit. But it was he, the day before Eric died, got sick after eating Corey.
Yeah.
So it was like the hush puppies or something. There was something like that. He's like, I got sick and then he recovered and he was fine. It was kind of reminiscent of the sandwich or the omelet or whatever the hell was on Valentine's Day. But this was a different guy that got ill. And it was like, did she like try and do a test run over here on him to see like, well, if this doesn't, do I need more? I'm like, was it? I mean, God.
I think it was most likely in my mind, it was probably residue from her handling those drugs.
Yeah, just enough to...
Yeah, just enough to because remember, these things, so some of the horrible things people will do, I mean, you can die just from touching. That's why cops carry Narcan with them for themselves, to protect themselves, because they even come into like... I don't know how these things work, but I know it just takes like just a touch and it'll enter your system and you can die.
Yeah.
And so if she's handling that kind of level of stuff that's going to kill you, the possibility of it, you know, getting on food that she then's given her boyfriend, that's pretty high. I mean, it's
level of expertise and care that I'm sure Corey gives everything. I'm sure she was handling
it. So precise. She's so exacting.
Yes. Handling it with care. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube and Substack on this case. We'll continue our conversation over there. The links are in the description. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you're downloading podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this and the many cases that we follow for you right here. Robin's latest book, It's Not All About Me, available wherever books are. Is it pre-order still, or is it?
Yes. Keep pre-ordering right now.
Okay.
You'll make everyone in my life much happier, including me. And next Tuesday is the release date.
So
you
all
can
right,
order now and get it next Tuesday.
Okay. Very, very good.
Thank
Go
you.
Go check it out wherever you get books. All right. Until next time, for Todd, for Robin, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.